Dr. Michael Eden is former Pfizer vice president and chief science officer, where he spent 16 years as an allergy and respiratory researcher. He later co-founded a biotech firm that the Swiss drug maker Novartis purchased for a lot of money. So Dr. Eden, thank you for joining us. If you could address the big question of should we vaccinate young children, if you give your perspective and opinion.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Amit. So yes, Dr. Mike Eden, I'm a lifelong research and development specialist. I'm a PhD, so I'm a scientist rather than a medical doctor. It seems that I'm the most senior person from the pharmaceutical industry to be speaking out in the world. So I think I'm at least as qualified as any of the scientists advising your government and mine. I'm a UK citizen. The reason I'm speaking out is we are simply not being told the truth. It'd be too complicated to guess at the reasons, but we are simply not being told the truth. And what I'm going to do in the next 15 minutes, I hope, is to convince you that we really should not even offer these vaccines to the broad mass of children, because the children themselves are at no meaningful risk of dying with the virus. The children do not pass the virus to other people. And the vaccines are of a new kind, and unfortunately they've got a really poor safety record. So if you remember only one thing from what I tell you, I'm absolutely certain that if you mandate vaccination of all of the children, roughly 100 of them per million will die as a direct result of your decision, and it will save no net lives. So let me tell you why I believe that. First, I think you know that the median age at death with COVID is 84 for females and 81 for men. It may differ slightly from country to country, but it's about the same as life expectancy. There's a very steep relationship between age and risk of death from COVID, as there are with other respiratory viral diseases. But as analyzed by very famous epidemiologists, including John Ioannidis of Stanford, the children are at much greater risk of illness and death from influenza, not from COVID. It does not kill kids. And I think we understand why. So that's my first point, is that the children very rarely contract the virus, very rarely even get any kind of symptoms. And it's extraordinarily low probability that they die of the virus. We know why this is: to gain entry inside your cells, it has to stick to a protein on the outside of the cells called ACE2. Its name is irrelevant, but in order to gain access to your children's house, to get inside the cells, they must bind to this protein, and that's how they get in. It turns out that young animals, including young children, have much, far fewer of these receptors. And the virus finds it difficult to gain access to them. So it's my contention that the children are not at risk from the SARS-CoV-2 virus. They're not at risk from COVID. I looked up the numbers. The all-cause mortality in America of children is roughly 1 in 10,000 per year. 1 in 10,000 per year. That's the tragedy. And less than 1% of those deaths even were preceded by a diagnosis of this infection. And that's just a PCR test, which you probably know is not particularly reliable and overcounts the cases. So I'm telling you that less than 1 in 100,000 American children who died had the virus on board. And I'm going to tell you at the end of what I'm going to say that the vaccines have got a much higher risk of death from administration of the vaccines than this 1 in 100,000. And that's why I'm absolutely certain, if you mandate the administration of these vaccines to all children, we can predict and roughly calculate how many will die. And it's far, far more than could possibly have died of the virus itself. So I think I've dismissed, I feel, that there isn't a risk to children to reduce. So don't vaccinate to protect them. They don't have a risk that's worth reducing. But the second point we often hear is that we must vaccinate certain people, including children, to stop them transmitting the virus to other and more vulnerable people. That's a lie in this case. I'm going to just give you a few pieces of statistics. In order to be a good source of infection, you have to have a lot of virus in your airway. If you've got very little virus, understandably, you can't give people a disease you don't have. But if you have lots of virus in your airway, you could infect somebody. But here's the thing. If you have lots of virus in your airway, you will have symptoms. It's not a negotiation. It's inevitable. And that's because the virus attacks you like a moss fire burning from one cell, one cell, one cell, through the lining of your airways. That's what the virus does as it infects you. That produces symptoms. It's not possible to have lots of virus and no symptoms. And also, your body fights back to defend you. And that immune response raises your temperature. It gives you symptoms. So what I'm telling you is, unless the children were floridly symptomatic, that is ill, it can't possibly represent a transmission risk to others. And they generally do not get these strong symptoms. Statistically, two things to note, because you can check this. In Sweden, they chose never to close their primary schools. So not 5 years to 11 years. They did not close their schools all the way through the pandemic. Not one child died with or of or by COVID in that time. Not one. They had a few hospitalizations, not one died. There's not a risk to reduce for this cohort. But here's a really important thing to tell you, that they don't transmit it to other people. I've just explained you have to have a lot of virus to transmit it. If you do, you will be ill, and children generally aren't ill. They're not, it's not possible for them to transmit what they don't have. So, but where's the data? When tracking was done in Wuhan, they asked the question, who was the first person in a household to have COVID-19? And they compared notes and they were astonished. And one of them eventually said to the other, you know, I've never found a case where the first person in a household was a child. And they said, that's funny, that's what I found too. There are no cases where the primary or so-called index case in a family was a child. It was always an adult. They might pass it to others in the family. What that tells you is what I've just said, that children essentially can't transmit it to other people because they don't get seriously ill with the virus, and so they simply don't have enough to transmit it. Also, there's been a formal transmission study that concluded the same, that if people are without symptoms, even in the bosom of their own house, they're almost never passed the virus to anybody else. So I've told you that the kids are not at risk themselves, so please don't vaccinate to protect them against the risk they're not running. And please also don't vaccinate them to, as it were, protect other people, because they don't transmit it either. But I've got a last interesting remark, given I've spent 32 years in the pharmaceutical industry. I cannot be described as an anti-vaxxer, although I have been smeared. I'm hugely in favor of innovative new medicines, provided they're safe. That's been my entire life and love professionally. And I've looked closely at the gene-based vaccines against COVID-19. They all induce your body to manufacture something called spike protein, the thing that sticks out of the surface of this virus. And when that happens, the spike protein sometimes is caused to be expressed in places you don't want, for example, in your blood or in your ovaries, unfortunately. When the vaccine causes spike protein to be manufactured on the inside of your blood vessels, spike protein is capable of initiating blood clotting. And that's why 75% of the serious adverse events reported anywhere around the world all relate to bleeding and clotting. I'm telling you, as a qualified toxicologist and as 32 years R&D professional to CEO level, unfortunately, there is a class risk with these vaccines, and I even understand how it works. So the bottom line then, and then I'm happy to take questions, is please don't vaccinate the children to protect them, because the rate at which they fall ill and die from it is statistically zero. Please do not vaccinate the children to protect other vulnerable people, because effectively zero occasions do they transmit it to other people, and they don't, because they don't get ill, and you must be ill to have enough virus to transmit. And finally, the vaccines themselves, unfortunately, because of the new technology that's been used, are associated with a rate of death that's higher from clotting and bleeding than from the virus itself in children. I'm going to stop at that point, and I would welcome any questions.
Thank you very much, Professor. Your words came in very loud and clear. We appreciate
Thank
the
you.
Time and your effort. It's a lot to digest in just a few minutes, but we definitely have many questions, and we're happy that you are here to answer. But the number one concern that I have, and that's, I presume, many of us have the same question, that as far as we understand, this will be implemented. This has been implemented as in the past. Now, if we're looking back at the past, in the past 6 months or 12 months in Israel, the cases of deaths and the case of the side effects, I'm sure that the professor has heard about and saw the results as far as the Ministry of Health is concerned. Now, we don't hear these messages, we don't hear these sounds
yes,
the way the professor is presenting it.
Yes.
Therefore, mm-hmm. if intended, as far as the Ministry of Health is concerned, as far as just less than 24 hours ago, the head of one of the senior hospitals, top three hospitals in Israel, announced that it's just 3 weeks away from children under 12 years old that they will be receiving in all their schools officially this vaccine. My question to you is, if indeed, do you feel that the side effects this time will be heard, or will it continue the same as it did as far as the elderly are concerned?
So I think if I've understood you, sir, it's that what I have said is not what your Minister of Health is saying. And that's true. It's absolutely true. That doesn't mean I'm lying. In fact, I'm definitely telling the truth. Me being here today, and I've been campaigning for the truth for over a year, has cost me substantially. I have destroyed my reputation with people inside the pharmaceutical industry, and I've lost many, many friends. But nevertheless, and I have no motive whatsoever to be speaking out, except that I'm absolutely certain of my opinion. And you might say, well, how has this happened? I'll just say it very briefly, and I don't want to return to it because it makes me sound crazy. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I never commented publicly on anything in my entire life other than my professional role ever. And I've started to comment because I could see lots of wrong things being done, and I finally concluded they're evil things, and I'm not even a religious person. So just in brief, that there isn't clearly an internationally coordinated plan to make people very frightened, to coerce them to accept vaccination, which clearly will give rise to so-called vaccine passports. It's really an electronic identity database. And once that's in place, whoever controls that database can force people to do whatever they want, because your life will be permissioned based on the validity of this certificate. So we could spend a week on this topic, but the evidence says that, and I'll just give you two pieces of information so that you can at least give this idea house room. When the virus arrived, certainly in Europe and North America, scores of countries all at the same time within a few days discarded their influenza pandemic preparedness plans, which they had refreshed every few years for decades. They all discarded it, and they all adopted the same set of statements driving narratives, which I found ridiculous as a scientist, because every single one of them is a lie, knowingly being told to you. And let me just give you two examples. One is, there aren't any treatments. We're led to believe. I ask people, name me the top two drugs that are highly effective in treating COVID-19 that your government and their medical advisors have told you about, because they wouldn't hide something like that, right? And they don't know. I've found people don't know. And then I show them Dr. McCulloch's review with 50 authors showing that ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, fluvoxamine, budesonide, dexamethasone, apixaban. All of these are independently proven to reduce severe illness and deaths. I'm a drug discoverer. I've spent all my life in it. I've reviewed the data. The data is at least as good for every one of those as quotes the vaccines. And you're not being told this. Well, that's really strange, isn't it? That's one thing. You're not being told about these successful treatments. And anyone who tries to propose them is ruthlessly smashed and smeared on the internet, even though they've no record of other than telling the truth, for example, myself. So treatment is one. The other one is we're all being masked, made to wear masks and tested often. Why? It's because we're told you could have the virus and be spreading it to people without knowing it. That is a lie. It's shown empirically in large peer-reviewed journal articles that you can go and look at if you like, where they looked at people who had the virus as judged by this PCR test, and they divided them into two groups, if you have symptoms or if you didn't have symptoms. And they asked, how often did these individuals infect another family member? People who had symptoms, maybe one in five of them would infect another family member over the next 2 weeks. People without symptoms, less than 1%. And that is probably the so-called false positive rate of the test. I don't think people without symptoms ever communicate the virus to other people. And this is in the intimacy of your own home. So it's not possible. And we are being lied to about the risk of transmission from people without symptoms. And so therefore the masks are unnecessary. Separately, masks have been studied to see if they reduce viral transmission. They do not. I could go on, but absolutely everything we're being told is a lie. So when I come back to what I told you earlier, that less than 1 in 100,000 people, children who have died with COVID, and that is a lower rate of death than the perhaps 1 in 25,000 risk of dying after vaccination because of this spike protein and clotting and bleeding problem. Those two data points are confirmable. So if we just remove all the propaganda, remove my allegations, and just say, how often do children die after having had a positive test of COVID? That's this low number. And then how many people die within a few days of vaccination? It's also a low number, but it's a bigger number. The conclusion, gentlemen, you must draw is that if you vaccinate all children, you will kill more of them than you could possibly have saved, and you'll save no one else because the children don't transmit. And the reason you're not being told from your ministry what I have said is, unfortunately, they've somehow either been hypnotized or they've agreed to tell lies to you. But that's the position. It is literally an absolutely remarkable thing that's happening. But what I'm saying, the truth, is unremarkable. This is what I do for a living. My job historically as a research scientist is this, and my boss once characterized it. He said, I notice you have a particular skill for spotting faint patterns in sparse data before other people do. And that's true. I'm a sort of scientific knowledge detective. My job is to do that. I'm probably not very good at anything else scientifically, but I realized something bad was happening very early on. And it's the first time in my entire 61 years that I've commented publicly. And I'm conscious it's extremely controversial. However, the fact that I'm the only former pharmaceutical industry person speaking out in no way makes me wrong. I've never been more confident in my grounds and statements. So I'll pause now. You may want to challenge me.
I wouldn't want to challenge you, Professor. Don't worry. You're too good to be challenged. But just to try to get an answer on my question, regarding to the children, if they would be vaccinated as government is intending to do, do you think, Professor, that we will be seeing, as far as the ministry is concerned, as far as the media is concerned, as far as the public knowledge is concerned, will we be seeing actual higher amounts of dangers and side effects?
I understand. I'm sorry. Yes, I failed to address your question because I didn't listen carefully enough. My apologies. So your questions are it's a very good question. Essentially, would we expect children to be injured essentially by vaccination at the same, whatever the rate is, as the same rate as other people? Obviously, I don't know is the answer to that question. But I would say yes on two grounds. at least in part, the side effects from these vaccines arises from having a vigorous immune and inflammatory response to it. It is appropriate that your body, its immune system wakes up and generates some level of inflammation in order to teach your body to remember what it is that you have had presented to you. And the idea is to do that without making you ill. And unfortunately, the problem is it might work. Everything might be perfect, except it does on occasion make people ill. And so young people will have vigorous immune systems. Really, that's why they don't get ill. They don't need any help. They don't need any artificial help in relation to COVID. So I think they will have vigorous immune responses. And my opinion would be we will unfortunately see deaths. I think it's absolutely predictable. I would comment at this point that this situation with this virus is different from influenza. So often I'm afraid the people who are misleading us have, they're using what people know, what I call a lie that's adjacent to the truth. It is true that children do acquire influenza viruses and that they can get ill and they certainly die. Far more children die of influenza than from COVID by a very long margin. But people have this idea that, well, we know children rarely can catch these viruses and die, and so let's vaccinate them. I'm pointing out that John Ioannidis' work and other people's work shows remarkably this sort of line of age versus probability of dying with the virus. And it just keeps going down and down as you get younger. There is no kick up like there is with influenza. I do expect them to suffer side effects, clotting and bleeding and so on. Broadly at the same rate as adults, because part of that response is due to their immune system responding. So I definitely wouldn't want to do it the other way around. Let's take a chance and hope that the drugs, the vaccines are safer in young people. I think that would be reckless.
We very much appreciate your time and your effort and your words of wisdom, Professor. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the honor of speaking to you this morning, this afternoon.